Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to the Dogs Program. We are the Dogs, the Defence of Government Schools Program, and we are here every Saturday to defend and promote public education. Now, there's a lot been going on, even though we're moving into the break, but last week there was a public meeting in Glenroy trying to put pressure on the Victorian government to finally live up to its obligations when it comes to public schools. Hopefully, over the next couple of weeks, we'll bring a little bit of audio from that meeting. So that's something to look forward to. But first, we've got some interesting articles. Andy's going to tell you about what Trevor Kobold's been up to. Over to you, Andy.
Increasing bureaucracy swallows more of public school funding. And this article was written by Trevor Kobold and published on December the 3rd. Increasing bureaucracy is a feature of public school systems in Australia. The growth in administrative staff in schools and in central departments has far outstripped the increase in teachers and students since 2015. The most dramatic staffing growth has occurred not in classrooms, but in state education departments. The growth in administrative staff reflects increasing reporting and compliance regulations required by governments in the face of the increasing complexity of student needs and expectations about service provision. It is absorbing an increasing proportion of expenditure on public schools. More funding is being diverted from core functions of teaching and supporting the learning and well-being of students to administrative and operational tasks. Moreover, there is widespread evidence that teachers are overloaded with administrative tasks themselves. A key issue is to identify what is necessary and reasonable and what is unnecessary and wasteful of time and resources. Reviews of the workload on teachers in public schools in New South Wales and Victoria have revealed that teachers face much unnecessary administrative work. As is the case for all government services and professions, schools and teachers have to undertake some administrative tasks to meet government regulations. The good news is that governments are making greater effort to identify what is needed to reduce bureaucracy. The bad news is that government responses to date do not provide much confidence that unnecessary and wasteful regulations will be reduced to any significant extent. Although the big funding increase for public schools under the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement is largely postponed to the last 5 years of the 10-year agreement, it is imperative that administration does not soak up more and more funding. The funding increase should be devoted to student learning and wellbeing. The growth in bureaucracy must be contained as much as possible to enable more resources to be directed at improving student outcomes and greater equity in outcomes. Administrative staffing increasing far faster than students and teachers. Non-teaching staff in public schools and out-of-school staff increased by much more than students and teachers in public schools between 2015 and 2024. Non-teaching staff in public schools increased by 47.7% and non-school staff by 89.1%, compared to only 7.4% for students and 16.2% for teachers. Non-teaching staff in primary schools increased by 44.9% compared to 4.3% for students and 15.6% for teachers. Non-teaching staff in secondary schools increased by 51.8% compared to 12.4% for students and 17% for teachers. The largest increase in non-teaching staff in schools was for administrative and clerical staff, who increased by 50.4%. This was 3 times the increase in teachers and 7 times the increase in students. Administrative and clerical staff increased by 47% in primary schools and by 55.8% in secondary schools. There was a significant increase in specialist support staff of 44.5%. This increase largely reflects increases in teacher aides, such as for disability students, learning support, counsellors, youth workers and IT support. The increase in primary schools was 46.4% and 42.3% in secondary schools. Central bureaucracy has grown even faster. The most dramatic staffing growth has occurred not in classrooms, but in state education departments. There was a huge increase in non-school staff, especially executive specialist support and administration and clerical staff. The number of executive staff in education departments more than doubled over the 9 years, from 635 in 2015 to 1,331 in 2024, an increase of 109.7%. the number of specialist support staff in central and regional offices almost doubled from 1,098 to 2,184, an increase of 98.9%. Specialist support staff in education departments include IT, human resource management, curriculum development, infrastructure planning, financial and other staff. The number of administrative staff increased from 8,284 to 15,512, an increase of 87.2%. All these increases far outstripped the increase in students and teachers. The increase in executive staff was nearly 7 times the increase in teachers and nearly 15 times the increase in students. The increase in specialist support staff was 6 times the increase in teachers and 13 times the increase in students. The increase in administration staff was over 5 times the increase in teachers and nearly 2 times the increase in students. Teachers are a declining proportion of the public school workforce. The composition of public school staff has changed significantly as a result of the differential increase in staffing categories. The proportion of teachers fell from 68.4% of all staff in public schools in 2015 to 62.2% in 2024. Administrative staff in schools increased from 23.5% of all staff in 2015 to 27.6% in 2024. Non-school staff increased from 4% to 6%. Total non-teaching staff in school and out of school increased from 31.6% to 37.8%. The proportion of teachers in primary schools dropped from 70.3% to 65.5%, while the proportion of administrative staff increased from 25.7% to 30.4%. Only 2.5% of primary school staff were specialist support in 2024 and was little changed from 2015 when it was 2.1%. There was also no change in the proportion of building and maintenance staff. Non-teaching staff increased from 29.7% of primary school staff to 34.7%, the increase being almost entirely due to the increase in administrative staff. The proportion of teachers in secondary school staff fell from 72.7% to 67.3%, while the proportion of administrative staff increased from 22.8% to 28.1%. Only 2.9% of secondary school staff were specialist support staff in 2024, which was almost the same as 2015, when the proportion was 2.6%. There was also no change in the proportion of building and maintenance staff. Non-teaching staff increased from 27.3% of secondary school staff to 32.7%, the increase being almost entirely due to the increase in administrative staff. Increased administrative and compliance demands are driving bureaucratisation. Several reviews have found that growth of departmental programs and policies has contributed to increased administrative and compliance workload. An audit of the administrative tasks of teachers conducted by the New South Wales Department of Education in 2024 identified the range and complexity of what teachers actually do in schools. It found that government policy is the main driver of administrative tasks in schools. The audit also found that more than 70% of operational tasks directly map to a policy. This highlights the link between policy requirements and increased workloads. It identified 201 policies involving 361 policy documents, which are difficult for schools to access, use, and implement. The audit also identified 105 tasks having high or very high bureaucratic workload on teachers involving processes considered frustrating, painful, cumbersome, or overly complex. Some 30 or so tasks with very high workload involving teachers included complex and manual paperwork, increased curriculum differentiation and resource creation, greater administration required for student well-being. The audit noted that the department had commenced work on consolidating policy documents, reducing them from 361 to 180 documents to streamline the documentation. The revised documents have been released in batches from March 2024 to reduce the change fatigue and consolidate communication to schools. However, consolidating policies in fewer documents without reducing reporting and compliance requirements does not necessarily reduce the number of administrative staff in the department or in schools. A review of administrative and compliance activities in Victorian public schools in 2024 also noted that government policy contributed to the administrative workload in schools. There is also evidence for a sustained increase in administrative and compliance workload in department policies and programs, which have grown over time, often in response to external regulatory or accountability requirements. New requirements compound over time to create a large workload, and it is rare to remove older requirements as new ones come into effect. The review noted that school autonomy in decision-making increases administrative burdens on school staff. It found that administration and compliance tasks take school staff away from their core business of improving student learning and well-being. It recommended that the department should reallocate operational tasks away from individual schools. State education departments are increasingly focused primarily on administrative and compliance roles rather than curriculum teaching and learning support. A cursory inspection of the organisational charts of education departments around the country reveals that very few branches are directly involved in supporting teaching and learning. The vast majority are devoted to administration of finance, policing compliance to regulations, performance monitoring, human resource management, and other corporate functions. For example, the New South Wales Department of Education has 7 divisions with over 50 branches, but only a few could be considered as directly involved in supporting teaching and learning. Similarly, only a few of the branches of the Victorian Education Department appear to be directly involved in supporting teaching and learning. Expenditure on administration outstripped expenditure on teaching. Expenditure on in-school and out-of-school staff for public schools has increased by much more than on teachers since 2014-15. Expenditure on teacher salaries, including expenditure on more teachers and salary increases, increased by 48.5% between 2014-15 and 2022-23, compared to 80.6% for non-teaching salaries. Expenditure on non-teachers in public schools increased by 76.7% and by 99.8% for non-teachers in central and regional offices. The increase in non-teaching expenditure is mainly attributable to the large increase in administrative staff in schools and in central and regional department offices, together with salary increases. While there was a large increase in specialist support staff in schools and out of school, they comprise only a very small proportion of all staff in public schools. Expenditure on teacher salaries in public and primary schools increased by 47.8% compared to 72% for non-teachers. In secondary schools, teacher expenditure increased by 49.5% compared to 83.3% for non-teachers. This trend represents a significant diversion of funding from teaching and learning to non-teaching staff in schools and non-school staff. It means that a larger percentage of the Schooling Resource Standard, SRS, of public schools is comprised of non-teaching, mainly administration, staffing, as this expenditure is also included in the calculation of the SRS. If the expenditure composition had remained the same as in 2014-15, about $1.58 billion more would have been spent on teachers in 2022-23. This estimate includes a nominal amount for payroll tax, which averages about 5% across Australia. Payroll tax is excluded from the estimation of the Schooling Resource Standard, SRS, which is the measure of the resources needed by schools to provide successful learning outcomes for all students. Payroll tax on $1.58 billion would be about $79 million, so that the diversion of expenditure from teachers amounts to about $1.5 billion in 2022-23. This is a rough estimate intended only to be indicative of the extent of the diversion of expenditure from teaching to non-teaching salaries. It represents about 2.8% of the SRS of public schools in 2023, based on figures supplied to Senate Budget 2024-25 estimates. More administrative staff have failed to reduce the administrative burden on teachers. It is ironic that the increase in administrative staff in schools has not reduced the administration load on teachers. The OECD Teaching and Learning International Survey, TALIS 2024, found that the hours spent on administration by lower secondary schools teachers was slightly up from TALIS 2018, 4.7 hours compared to 4.4 hours. The administrative workload on Australian lower secondary teachers is the fourth largest in the OECD, which is the same as in TALIS 2018. The National Trends Teacher Workforce Report, published by the Australian Institute for Teaching and Learning, found that the hours spent on administration by primary school teachers increased from 5.4 hours per week in 2021 to 6 hours per week in 2023, and increased from 6 to 6.4 hours for secondary school teachers. Many studies show that the administrative burden on teachers remains high. For example, a paper by academics at Monash University on the future needs of the teaching profession found that administration and compliance activities and meetings take disproportionate teacher time. Another recent paper on teacher workload found that administrative duties, compliance requirements, and excessive data collection are taking time away from lesson planning and student engagement. Preserve funding increase for student learning and wellbeing. Increasing administration is a challenging issue facing public education systems throughout Australia. It is a major factor in teacher workload and teachers leaving the profession. And more funding is being diverted to administration while public education remains massively underfunded and there are huge achievement gaps between rich and poor. As in the case of other professions, teachers must undertake at least some administrative tasks. Schools cannot be regulation-free zones and complying with regulations requires administration and operational tasks. Regulations are necessary to provide such things as teacher and student health and safety, data collection, effective financial management, and to meet many other societal and government expectations of public schools. As documented by the New South Wales and Victorian reviews of the workload of teachers, a wide variety of government regulations drive the administrative demands on schools and teachers. A key issue is identifying those that are necessary and reasonable, and those that are outdated, unnecessary, and wasteful of time and resources. To their credit, the governments around Australia have recognised the extent of the problem and instituted reviews of the administration load. However, the responses of governments so far do not provide much confidence that the administrative burden on schools is being genuinely addressed. It is imperative that growth of bureaucracy in public school systems be contained to limit the workload of teachers and the diversion of funding away from teaching and supporting the learning and well-being of students. Public schools will remain heavily underfunded over the next 10 years. Restricting bureaucracy in central office and schools would free up funding for more teachers and other professionals to directly support the learning and well-being of students. This paper was covered in stories in several News Corp websites, including the Herald Sun and the Advertiser.
Thank you so much for that, Andy. Some more eye-opening analysis from Trevor Kobold and Save Our Schools. Let's have a quick break. We'll be back with more dogs after this.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy. Aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back to the Dogs Program. We're the Defence of Government Schools program here on 3CR. Each week here on the Dogs, we talk about some great state schools that do a great deal of work with very little funding, and we get a lot of those results from the Acara My School website. And what's not helpful is when the mainstream right-wing media uses the Acara My School website data to push its own agenda. This is an article by Connor Duffy titled "Education Leaders Call on News Corp to Cease Harmful NAPLAN League Tables." In short, almost all News Corp publications use My School data to rank schools by NAPLAN score in league tables, breaking down local, state, and national performances. Critics say it is not in the public interest, causes harm, and is deeply unfair because it fails to take into account children's socioeconomic backgrounds. an open letter from education leaders will be published in an advertisement paid for by the AEU. Education leaders from across Australia have published an open letter attacking News Corp Australia for misleading and crude league tables that rank schools based on NAPLAN marks. The letter's been signed by teachers unions, principal associations, the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA, parents groups, sector leaders, and academics. When our education leaders, including teachers, principals, and experts, join forces with parents groups to call out the harm creating and publishing crude leagues tables cause, ACARA expects those media organisations to heed the advice, ACARA CEO Stephen Greel said. NAPLAN, National Assessment Program Literacy and Numeracy, is an annual test of students in years 3, 5, 7 and 9. Administered by ACARA, it was designed to give parents individual data on students and school performance, as well as give policymakers a snapshot of the health of school systems. News Corp tabloid outlets have long used NAPLAN data published by ACARA on MySchool to rank Australia's 10,000 schools. Publishing school league tables is irresponsible and harmful. NAPLAN data was never designed to be weaponized into league tables, AEU Federal President Karenna Haythorpe said. When misused in this way, it distorts public understanding and undermines confidence in our public education system. ACARA argues that ranking schools based on raw marks is distorted because it takes no account of the wealth of communities, parental education, or student progress. Around 80% of differences in NAPLAN means scores are accounted for by the socio-educational status of a school's community, Mr. Greel said. The AEU originally tried to place the open letter in News Corp publication, The Daily Telegraph, which declined to publish it. The ABC cited a rejection email from News Corp that reads, "Unfortunately, we're unable to run this creative as it is an open letter directed against News Corp and our brand." The open letter, instead published in rival newspapers, is the latest escalation in a campaign from leading voices in education to pressure News Corp Australia to scrap the lists. Schools are incredibly complex and diverse. Reducing them to simplistic league tables without context does a disservice to our school communities, Brad Hayes from the Independent Education Union said. It's lazy, clickbait journalism that undermines public understanding and does nothing to support quality education. The Daily Telegraph has previously been warned its league tables breached the New South Wales Education Act, which prevents ranking schools, but legal action has not been taken. News Corp Australia and the editor of the Daily Telegraph, Ben English, did not provide an on-the-record response to questions about the advertisement, but defended its NAPLAN coverage. "Our mastheads do not shy away from sharing important information to help parents and families make informed choices about their children's education," a News Corp spokesperson said. "NAPLAN is publicly available information, and a clear public interest exists in us publishing many different views about NAPLAN, which our coverage has highlighted." In a news article published on Thursday titled "NAPLAN 2025, An Ugly Lesson in School Secrecy," the newspaper argued it was providing a service to parents. The Daily Telegraph makes it easy for mums, dads and parents-to-be to look at all their options by publishing a full searchable list of all schools' results along with thorough analysis, a task that is being made increasingly difficult every year by government departments who oppose your right to know, the article stated. ACARA said it was a breach of the terms of service of its website and has urged other media outlets not to proceed with league tables. News Corp also has a lucrative majority stake in REA Group, which owns realestate.com.au and lists sometimes combined NAPLAN scores and median house prices. Independent education analyst Tricia Jar from the Centre for Independent Studies, who was not a signatory on the letter, urged parents to be cautious of the league tables. It is often a reflection of the school's demographics, not always a reflection of what the school is doing in terms of quality of its instruction, Ms. Jar said. I think it's much better that parents use what's on the My School website to get a sense of the schools in their local area and looking at things like their progress measure. That's the end of the article. Although I would like to add, the Akara My School website can be cherry-picked. You certainly know that outlets like News Corp are always going to use it to justify government expenditure on private schools and the segregation and separation of children from each other on the base of class and religion. And that is something that the Dogs absolutely oppose, but it's absolutely expected that right-wing news outlets would use such data against children. One might hope the public is informed enough to be able to recognise when that cherry-picking occurs, but the fact that those mainstream media outlets are in fact still mainstream kind of proves the opposite. Anyway, enough from me. Let's go over to Jeff, who's taking us once again around the world. Over to you, Jeff.
Good afternoon, listeners. We're going to avoid the civil unrest that's brewing over in America. I say civil unrest, I mean the danger to civil society there, known as the Trump Organization or the Trump Administration. And we're going to go to some good news stories from overseas. We're going to start in the UK, where there's an article in the SSB Crack News, which is a blog that follows, a Substack that follows Defence Science and Technology News. And the article is from the news desk from the 6th of December, 25, and it says, State schools surge in performance, dominating the 2026 Sunday Times Parent Power League table. So this is building on the fact that the Labor government over there has been promoting public education at the expense of private education. Some of the private education subsidies that were in place, such as tax exemptions and things like that, have been removed, and people are moving to state schools, and the state schools feel supported. Kids are doing well. So we're just going to read the article, and it begins, State schools in the UK have achieved remarkable progress, as highlighted in the 2026 Sunday Times Parent Power League table. On average, state schools have surged 9.4 places in their rankings year on year, significantly outpacing their private counterparts. London schools have continued their stronghold, capturing 8 of the top 10 positions for the 4th consecutive year. In a notable shift in performance dynamics, boys' schools have excelled, advancing an average of 17 places, while girls' schools experienced a slight decline, falling by 2.4 places in the overall rankings. The East Anglia region notably recorded the largest improvement, with schools climbing an average of 15 spots. Despite the impressive gains made by state schools, private institutions still dominate the upper echelons of the rankings, securing 78 of the top 100 spots. Among the standout performers, St Dominic's Grammar School in Belfast made significant strides, jumping from 616 to 145, marking it as the highest riser. Conversely, Birkenhead School faced a steep decline, plummeting 407 places to 510th. Queen Elizabeth School in Barnet emerged as a leader among state schools, achieving the highest ranking in a decade, landing at 6th overall in the combined Parent Power League table. The school has been recognised with multiple accolades, including State Secondary School of the Year, and also secured titles for academic excellence in A-levels and GCSEs. Neil Enright, the head teacher of Queen Elizabeth School, emphasised the school's mission to foster confident, capable and responsible young men. St Paul's School in London claimed the title of Independent Secondary School of the Year for academic excellence, further solidifying its reputation. Recognition for excellence was widespread, with various state and independent schools acknowledged for their specific achievements across multiple categories. For instance, Churston Ferrers Grammar School received a commendation, while Wilson School was awarded State Secondary School of the Year for GCSEs. Across the country, schools are adapting their educational approaches to embrace character building and critical thinking alongside academic rigour. The rankings reflect a growing emphasis on the holistic development of students, blending traditional academics with extracurricular pursuits. Regional highlights revealed diverse landscapes of excellence. Anyway, I'm going to leave the article there. It's a long article and it goes through various British schools. But the good news is school education in general in England is on the up, and performance of state schools in particular is very strong. And so it just shows that if you invest in education, public education particularly, the whole of society benefits. Maybe the independent schools are lifting their game because the competition from state schools is now much more prevalent. Anyway, now we're going to go to Africa, where things aren't so good. This is from the Africa Report, which is written by Pierre Brito, and she's the Global Director of Education and Adolescent Development at UNICEF. This is the Africa Report is put out by the United Nations International Children's Education Fund. Well, I can't remember. Sorry about that. UNICEF. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it is titled, On the African Continent, Every Child Deserves Foundational Learning. And this is from December, the last came out in the last week. How is it that in the 21st century, despite unprecedented advances in technology, globalisation and education reforms, 9 out of 10 children in sub-Saharan Africa still cannot read or write by the age of 10? Millions of African children are left behind, their right to education unfulfilled. It's about education systems failing to ensure that children acquire foundational skills. The reality is sobering, yet the challenge is not a lack of evidence or solutions. We know what works. The responsibility before us is clear. To guarantee that every child in every context has access to foundational learning is a fundamental right. Each year the delay of delay is another lost generation. Rights deferred are rights denied, and history will not excuse leaders who fail to act. A right, not a privilege. Foundational learning is often described as the first step towards a better life, transforming societies, fueling economies, and shaping future generations. For too long, however, education has been framed mainly in economic terms. While compelling, this lens risks obscuring a deeper imperative. Ensuring that every child gains foundational skills is not only a pathway to prosperity, but also a universal human right and the foundation of a just and equitable world. World leaders have already affirmed this principle. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child enshrines education as a right for every child. The Sustainable Development Goals commit us to inclusive and equitable equality education for all. At the heart of these commitments lies foundational learning, the ability to read, write, and count. And when these skills are embedded across systems through curriculum, teacher training and assessments, they consistently drive better outcomes. The multiplier effect is also substantial. A recent evidence synthesis from the What Works For Hub for Global Education at Oxford University shows that children who master foundational skills early are more likely to remain in school, attain higher levels of education and translate learning into lifetime earnings. For women, the benefits are even more profound. Improved health, greater agency in financial and personal decisions, and delayed marriage and childbirth. Foundational learning is not only a right itself, it is an equaliser that amplifies every other right. Where the right to learn is most denied. Nowhere is the denial of this right more evident than in fragile and conflict-affected contexts. As of 2024, 234 million children face learning disruptions from emergencies and protracted crises, while education in emergencies funding risks being cut by $745 million, that's 24% by 2026. For many, school is more than a place of learning, it is a lifeline. But without foundational skills, children in crisis lose both immediate protection and the chance to rebuild their lives. Inequality does not wait until primary school either. In low-income countries, 6 in 10 children begin life already excluded from early care and learning opportunities, denied the chance to even start school on equal footing. Without early childhood education, the poorest arrive at school already behind, and the foundational learning cannot equalise as intended. 107 million children in sub-Saharan Africa are now out of school. The Tashkent Declaration has already sounded the alarm. Unless governments and partners act decisively to expand across access to early learning and foundational skills, inequities will deepen for another generation. The injustice is also written into budgets. Reallocating just 1% of public education expenditure towards the poorest 20% could lift 35 million children out of learning poverty worldwide. Yet today, as per UNICEF analysis, the poorest learners benefit from only 16% of public funding, while the richest receive 28%. In Africa, just 12% reaches the poorest, compared to 37% to the richest. Insufficient investment in foundational learning and limited support for marginalised learners drive stark disparities. Children from the poorest families make up only 11% of pre-primary enrolment and a mere 2% at tertiary, reflecting the weak foundational skills and financial barriers. Such disparities perpetuate cycles of exclusion, driving higher dropout rates and entrenching inequality across generations. However, it's important to note that resources alone will not guarantee results. Delivering on the right to foundational learning requires embedding equity from the outset in national foundational learning strategies, policy design, and implementation. According to the latest estimates from the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, that's what it stands for, UNESCO, 107 million children in sub-Saharan Africa are now out of school. Governments and partners must not only commit resources but also become data conscious, disaggregating by geography, gender, disability or refugee status to identify who is left behind. Without such focus, well-intentioned spending risks reinforcing inequity rather than dismantling it. Guaranteeing the right to learn. Rights are meaningful only when the systems deliver them. Foundational learning must be embedded across curriculum, teacher preparation, assessments and accountability mechanisms, not as a pilot project but as the backbone of national policy. Policy will is decisive. Where leaders have prioritised foundational learning, progress has followed. Where they have not, millions of children remain excluded. Accountability must follow. Governments are duty bearers of this right, but parents and communities must be empowered to demand it. Foundational learning cannot remain a technocratic debate. It must be treated as a political and social contract between citizens and their leaders. The path forward. The way forward is clear. Governments and partners must act on three fronts. Start early. Early childhood education is the front line of equity. Leaders must guarantee that every child, regardless of background, enters school ready to learn. Foundational skills cannot equalise opportunity if they begin too late. This is a right that must be protected from the very first years of life. Prioritise and safeguard foundational learning. From fragile states to stable ones, education systems must safeguard foundational learning even in crisis. This requires political courage beyond election cycles. Leaders must make foundational learning non-negotiable, embedding equity from the outset in the curriculum, teacher training and resource allocation. And finally, finance with equity. Ensure that equity is not just a technical exercise, but a political decision. Leaders must prioritise the most marginalised first to ensure that no one is left behind. Protect domestic education budgets even in times of crisis. And, as committed in the Noachuk Declaration for Education, allocate 4-7% of GDP to education with special budgets dedicated for foundational learning to unleash Africa's young potential. Achieving this goal demands collective action of every stakeholder working in concert to make foundational learning a shared priority. The choice is stark. Either invest in the foundations of learning today or consign another generation to inequity tomorrow. Foundational learning is the equaliser of our time, the test of whether we take children's rights seriously or allow injustice to persist. And that's the end of the article. I thought that was a really, really beautiful article, and one hopes that that they will listen. Especially given the cuts that the United States has made to US aid. There's a lot of slack to be picked up by other countries in promoting education in Africa. Now we're going to finish up in Denmark. It's a short article. This is by Andre K. Unsplash, I believe. This is from the Eurydice, which is an article... A series of articles put out by the European Union from the official website of the European Union, Eurydice. And it's Denmark. This came from the 8th of December 25. Denmark, agreement on mobile-free primary and lower secondary schools, a school-based leisure time and school-based leisure time facilities. So taking mobile phones out of primary schools and lower education. It begins. A broad majority of Danish Parliament has agreed to establish mobile-free primary and lower secondary schools and school-based leisure time facilities. The purpose of the agreement is to ensure a setting for in-depth studies, concentration and communities for the benefits of pupils. Research indicates that over half of the students in the 6th to 8th year are distracted by their own or others' screen use during lessons. In response, a significant parliamentary majority has agreed to minimise screen use during instructional time. Mobile-free schools and school-based leisure time facilities. The agreement mandates a legal requirement for primary and lower secondary schools and school-based leisure facilities to be mobile-free starting from the 26-27 school year. The Ministry of Children and Education will provide a standard policy template for schools to adopt. School boards and parents groups must create a local policy to ensure compliance with this requirement. The regulation will apply to smartphones and other private electronic devices with access to the internet. This does not include computers and tablets that are used as part of the instruction. Schools and parent boards can include justified exceptions in their policies, such as allowing electronic device use to support children with disabilities. Content filtering and non-relevant websites. Additionally, the agreement seeks to enhance and focus the learning conditions by requiring content filtering tools that block access to non-educational or non-pedagogical websites. These can include social media, gaming and shopping sites. The specific measures for ensuring students only access relevant content will be decided locally by each school. And that's the end of the article. So it's just a bit of news. The Danes are moving away from having mobile phones in schools. I think that's an excellent idea. Well, with that, I'll pass you back to the headquarters of the Dogs, and I wish you, if I don't talk to you before now, between now and Christmas, we'll wish you a very Merry Christmas, and hope your New Year is good too. Cheerio.
Thanks so much, Jeff. It's time for a quick break here on the Dogs program. We'll be right back.
Looking for an easy way to keep up with your annual 3CR subscription? You can now set up an annual debit from your bank account or credit card, and once a year your payment will be automatically deducted. You can cancel at any time and you'll get a reminder each year before payment. Be a constant supporter of Melbourne's precious independent community radio station and set up a recurring payment today. Just go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Teachers have had their qualifications, their pay, their pensions and their working conditions attacked relentlessly by this government.
I'm the proud product of a government-funded primary school education and of a government-funded secondary school education.
Australia is one of the richest and luckiest countries in the world, and there's no reason whatsoever why we can't have the very best public schools in the world.
It's still not good enough that kids with disability miss out.
Our education is not for profit. Our education is not for profit.
You're listening to The Dogs, the defence of government schools on 3CR.
Welcome back to the Dogs program, and now we're into our good news section of the Dogs program where we talk about some great state schools. I've got an article here from the ABC from early December titled "The Secret Sauce Powering the Schools Punching Above Their Weight in NAPLAN." It's by Connor Duffy and it begins: parents can check the latest NAPLAN scores for 10,000 schools across the country on the MySchools website. Student results have been concerning in the last 3 years, with national figures showing 1 in 3 are not meeting expectations in reading and writing. However, many schools are bucking that trend and outperforming expectations with a focus on explicit teaching styles. Springvale Rise Primary School in southeast Melbourne is low on privilege but high on achievement. As NAPLAN results for schools are released, it is being hailed a school making a difference by the administrators of the annual test, the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA. We have a really culturally diverse community. A lot of our families are of refugee-type backgrounds. Many have come from Burma, from Myanmar, Principal Debbie Cottier said. Their journeys are wide and varied. A lot of the parents haven't had much education themselves. 93% of students come from non-English speaking backgrounds, and 78% are in the bottom quartiles for socioeconomic advantage. Springvale Rise is one of about 50 schools in each state ACARA has identified as making a difference for above average scores compared to students with similar demographics. Roughly two-thirds of Springvale Rise students made above average progress in reading, writing and numeracy between years 3 and 5. Ms. Cottier says the school's focus on explicit teaching, use of data to spot knowledge gaps, and a focus on building a great culture were the keys to its success. Explicit teaching combines old-school teacher-led instruction with the latest science on how kids' brains work to avoid mental overload. Lessons are broken into small chunks with the teacher modelling the learning and aiming to leave students with a clear understanding of what's required. It contrasts with other learning styles like inquiry or student-centred learning, which aims to give children more autonomy in the classroom. A growing body of evidence suggests explicit learning works for the largest number of learners, though it has fierce critics, especially in academia, who deride it as drill and kill. We are so proud. The joy you see from our families when they hear about the successes that we're making is really inspiring, Ms. Cottier said. That pride is written on the face of 11-year-old Dilawa, who dreams of becoming a lawyer. The school is an amazing place for me to be, and I feel very safe and happy at school, Dilawa said. My favourite subject at school is writing because it helps me build up my vocabulary. His Year 5 classmate, Jessica, prefers maths, but also loves the school and hopes to become a student leader next year. Something I like about our school is that there are many different cultures, Jessica said. Everyone has a say, and they all get a voice. If I disagree with someone, I share my opinion. About 900 kilometres away from Sydney's affluent North Shore, Chatswood Primary is another school being celebrated for punching above its weight. There are both striking similarities and drastic differences. 93% of the students are also from non-English speaking backgrounds, but most have much higher levels of socio-educational advantage. The common thread is systematic, consistent, explicit teaching and the use of data to spot and reverse gaps in knowledge before the kids fall behind. More than 60% made above average progress in literacy and numeracy between years 3 and 5, compared to students with similar levels of socio-educational advantage. It's incredibly rewarding. That's why we get into teaching, to make a really positive impact and to test the potential of each student, Principal Cameron Jones said. Research shows if we can narrow the gap of achievement in year 3, that makes a huge difference to what students can achieve in year 12. Deputy Principal Ronnie Holstein said the school's been working for 5 years to ensure consistent, explicit teaching practices across all classrooms. Having success criteria that makes it very clear what the students need to do, there's no guesswork in the learning. It's very clear to them what the lesson is about, why they're doing it, she said. Educational analyst and former teacher Tricia Jar from the Centre for Independent Studies said the teaching approach was evidence-based and backed by science. It would be difficult to point out an example of a school that has had a quick and sustained improvement in its student results without using explicit instruction, Ms. Jar said. Ms. Jar said explicit instruction could turn around Australia's overall NAPLAN results after figures released in July again showed 1 in 3 students were not meeting challenging but reasonable expectations for literacy and numeracy. Changes to the NAPLAN test in 2023 mean this latest data allows parents to see how their children have performed across year levels for the first time in several years. It's great to have the student progress data back, ACARA CEO Stephen Greel said. It means we can look at schools in terms of growth, the way in which those families and schools have worked with those children over a two-year period. ACARA publishes the My School website. Why ACARA does not highlight raw scores. ACARA says many students who attend the schools with the best raw scores have affluent and well-educated parents, which is a big advantage. It says raw NAPLAN data to show the best performing public and private schools can be misleading. ACARA says praising schools where top students attend just because they are getting high scores mistakes the outcome for the educational input provided by the school. It says many of these students would do just as well at other schools. My School allows parents to track results against similar schools, which ACARA says is a fairer means of comparison. Mr. Greel says ranking and comparing schools on raw scores alone, as some media outlets did, was misleading and crude. He said that it did not take into account parental advantage, which has been increasingly shown to be crucial in a child's success. Our teachers and principals deserve better than us just ranking them in terms of one data point. Those people are in there every day working with those students, Mr. Greel says. Ms. Jar agreed student progress over time and comparing to similar schools were fairer metrics for gauging performance. Now we have a sense of what proportion of students are making above average progress, and that's a really good indicator of how is this school actually supporting all its students or not to make good progress, she said. So obviously that will lead into our Great State School of the Week.
Every week on the Dogs program we have a special segment to show a different state school is a great school.
State schools are great schools.
School of the week. State school.
School of the week.
Great state schools.
State schools.
School of
the week. School for the week here on the Dogs program.
And this week's Great State School of the Week is Springvale Rise Primary School. Here's a little bit from their website. From the principal, Springvale Rise Primary School prides itself on being a safe, supportive and inclusive learning environment and celebrates all our families' diverse cultural backgrounds and perspectives as we believe they enrich our learning community each and every day. Our staff have all been appointed because of their high expectations, enthusiasm and commitment to making a difference to the lives of all of our students, their families and the wider school community. I'm confident that you'll find that they are very skilled at improving both student learning and well-being outcomes. We also employ a number of staff members who'll be able to assist you and your children in your first language. Springvale Rise Primary School is located in the southeastern Victorian region, approximately 25 kilometres from the Melbourne city centre. And although we are two campuses, we are one school. Come join the Springvale Rise Primary School family. We would love to have you. And that's from Principal Debbie Cottier. Now some facts and figures from the ACARA My School website. The enrolment is 451 students, and the ICSEA value is well below the average at 929. It's representative of a very diverse urban community. From the upper 25% of parental income come 7% of students. From the second level of parental income comes 14% of students. From the third 25%, that's below 50% of income for the parents, is 18% of students. And from the lowest income quartile for parents come 60% of students, with 92% of students speaking a language other than English. Their finances: recurrent grants from the Australian Government, $1.9 million, from the Victorian Government, $7.1 million. Private fees and contributions are at $256,000, and other private contributions, $116,000. So that roughly works out to $20,476 per pupil. And their capital grants are only $376,000 over the last 3 years. This is a school doing an amazing job on very basic funding. Their NAPLAN results are astonishing. They're all well above average. So congratulations to Springvale Rise Primary School. You are our great state school of the week. That's all we've got time for this week. We will be with you over the next few weeks in summer, and hopefully we'll be bringing a bit of audio from a public meeting that was held in Glenroy recently, trying to put pressure on the Victorian government to fully fund public schools here. And so much for the education state. Our teachers are the lowest paid in Australia. Our public schools in Victoria are the least funded. So much is still afoot for the rest of this year. Thank you for joining us here on the Dogs program today. If you'd like to find out more about us, you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. That's www.adogs.info. But from all of us here at the Dogs program, it's bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station. It helps us remain financially independent and is an important part of our community governance.
It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
3CR, Radical Radio. Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.